With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Leeds.
They're an unruly lot in the studio tonight. Crikey, what a start to the show this is, if you weren't already aware. The Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, joined in the studio, as ever, by John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Nat Dufton with us for another week. Hello, Nat.
Hey, mate, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. And a debutante, James Wood. Hello.
Good evening, man. How are you?
Good, thank you. Great to have you on the show. The boys are packed in. We've got plenty coming up. We're going to be reflecting on that defeat to Sheffield Wednesday last weekend. Plenty to talk about there, no doubt. A bit of a transfer watch. We've got Gary Devenport on from the Talking Shut podcast, one of my faves. Flo Lloyd-Hughes will be joining us from the QPR podcast. And of course, your listener questions will come at the very end of the show. Just a quick update from the Championship. Fulham leading Middlesbrough 1-0 at Craven Cottage. Anthony Knockhart with the goal there. Fulham in third spot, of course. If this continues in the way that it is, they will be just 4 points adrift of Leeds United. We'll get onto that and plenty more. But first, John, the opening stat, if you will. Ooh. I didn't forget it this week, mate.
Yeah, well done. Kiko Casilla. I've got a Kiko Casilla stat. I know you like
gritty.
Kiko Casilla has let in 76.47% of shots on target faced in the last six games.
Right. Okay.
That's a lot.
So 76.47% of shots on target. Okay. Sometimes I have an issue with goalkeeper stats.
Okay.
Just because of how you can measure those stats. Now, what are the...
You saw the game, the goal against Sheffield.
The opener. Yeah, Murphy. Yeah. So that one was an error.
Okay.
Right? The second one, no.
No.
So what I thought you might have dug into a little bit more with these stats is the old XG.
Post-shot XG.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't done that because I don't have the post-shot XG figures against us. I have Bamford's, but not against us. But I don't know how that is. But yeah, I think everyone would agree that Cassie has actually been quite poor in terms of shots faced. That said, there is an extent to which, and we've talked about this a lot, that the way that Leeds play, if they lose possession when they're in attacking transition, so when they're moving from defence into attack, they leave themselves exposed. For example, I put out a thread on our Twitter feed this morning that shows the fourth goal that Birmingham scored, where Alioski lost the ball and then they just flew through the left-hand side again and scored. So I think that probably plays into it. I think he probably faces better chances on average than most keepers do in the Championship. So that probably plays into it as well.
Mm, it does. I would say it definitely does. The fact that he does face better chances. Listen, I agree with you. And I think that his form, I mean, gents, would you agree? Casillas' form in recent weeks hasn't been the best that it has been earlier on in the season.
I think he's been at
blame for some goals. I can think of the Birmingham game where he just ran out of his goal and left it open. Like you said, the Murphy thing against West Brom, that was he missed his punch and they scored. So there are those errors that come from the keeper, and that doesn't instill confidence in the defence in front of you. But again, you know, that Nui goal was, that was a great finish. So it's those that sometimes as a keeper, you just, there's nothing you can do about it.
But that's the thing. It's like the ones you'd expect him to save, he doesn't save. The Murphy one at the near post. Like against Fulham, Cavaliero picks out top bins, world-class save. Against West Brom, Matt Phillips through one-on-one, he gets the ball. It's like he misses the ones that he should easily save, and he makes world-class saves when he wants to. And that's the really frustrating thing watching him as a keeper. It's like there's no consistency with which ones he saves and which ones he doesn't.
Like a keeper for the cameras. As soon as the cameras are on, he's like, right, I'm going to do an amazing Hollywood dive now.
Well, this is an argument. It gets labelled a lot of goalkeepers. David De Gea being one of those, of course, as well. But with goalkeepers, as we know, often it's your faults, your flaws that are highlighted as opposed to the things that you do that no one really notices. But I do understand where you're coming from with Kassir. The first goal against Sheffield Wednesday, yes, that was his error. The second, he couldn't do much about. So let's actually focus on the game itself, gents, because what happened? What happened last weekend?
I actually only managed to watch the second half live for various reasons. And I didn't think we were... all of my friends who are watching were like, we've been awful, this is terrible, you know, it's just another one of those games where we just sort of faded out of the game, we don't look great. I didn't think we were that bad. And I've rewatched the game since, the whole game, and I didn't think we were that bad the whole time. It's one of those things, again, where it's frustrating because you feel as though that first goal is a goal that should never have gone in on a number of levels. Stuart Dallas takes a poor touch, for example. I don't think Liam Cooper covered himself in glory. And then there's the shot straight through Kassir. And it's one of those things where once that goes in, you kind of think, well, that's that. Like, who cares that it's 2-0? They score a good goal later, no denying that. But at that point, like, Leeds weren't looking like they were going to get the draw. So I think it's just one of those things where we are so fragile in those scenarios. We don't score enough in those games, and we concede. We make it easy for oppositions to concede to score against us. And I think that's what is frustrating for the fan base, is that we put a huge amount of effort into control games, and then all it takes for us is just one mistake, and that's it.
I think it's as well that we had the chances to win the game. So you've got Harrison from Phillips free kick. You've got Bamford at the near post. It's a weird thing to say, but it feels like if it's Sheffield Wednesday getting those chances, that goes in the back of the net. And they didn't seem like the sort of team that if we'd gone 2-0 up, they were going to roar back with a comeback and get back into the game unless we let them. Mm. And it's because we get the story of the season is we had the dominance, we had the chances, don't put them away. And then we get hit by what's a classic 1-2 combination. Second goal, Ayling is pushed up, trying to get a counter going, trying to get an equaliser. There's a massive overload for them at the back, and they get a fairly well-worked second. Mm. Yeah.
I'm also not one to talk about refereeing decisions, but I thought the chance that the Leeds chance that immediately preceded their first goal was Bamford was just being bear hugged by the defender, and I think that it is quite frustrating. I think especially when you watch a lot of the Premier League football, when you would expect a penalty for that kind of, I mean the defender's behind him and he's got his arms around him and Bamford gets his head on the ball, but there's no denying that you can't head the ball freely when you have someone holding on to you like that. So there's little frustrations like that where you kind of think if that is given as a penalty, and you're not always expecting that to be given, but if that gets given as a penalty, it's 1-0 to Leeds, and then the narrative entirely switches on its head. You kind of think, well, you know, people will start saying, oh, it's another game that they ground out, but you know, that's what teams who win the championship do, that you have to grind out results. And so I think the frustration for us comes from the fact that it just feels like it's on a knife edge all the time. It can go one way or the other, and then the narrative just completely flops depending on which side of the fence the pitch, the events on the pitch go. So it's hard work being a Leeds fan at the moment, I think.
I think it's a bit brave to say that we get a penalty and we definitely score that. Our record with penalties over the last few years.
Also, we had the offside goal, which, I mean, we watched live together and...
Yeah, not offside.
It wasn't offside. It went through and it immediately went up and we went, there's nothing wrong with that. And they showed it back and it's like, yeah, he's perfectly onside. And benefit of the doubt is what I've always sort of thought it was, and that wasn't given. Yeah, so if that's another team, is that given? Is it because it's Leeds that it's not given?
Are we saying there?
Have I just dropped the agenda bomb?
I'm stepping well back from this. I don't think Leeds are punished by referees or the EFL.
Sean Harvey's gone now, it's fine.
Yeah, that's definitely a dangerous road to go down. In terms of rifts fellas, I know this isn't really a thing, but Calvin Phillips was quite vocal on social media this week, wasn't he? Saying that we don't need to listen to what everybody else is saying about us. I know that certain fans are suggesting that the players aren't happy with other players in the squad. It was alluded to the fact that he might have maybe had a bit of a riff with Kiko Casilla. We name him again. He denied that. He said, I'm not saying it was lies. It was just made up, which I couldn't quite understand between the two there. But he has come out and said, look, we're all fine. We know that we go through a sticky patch. Everything's okay.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things you've just got to acknowledge as a player, isn't it? Like, you know that at some point during the season, your keeper is going to make an error and that's going to cost you a goal. And, you know, that's almost the cost of being a professional football team. You know, there are keepers that go through entire seasons without making mistakes, but, you know, they're playing for Real Madrid and Barcelona and Bayern Munich. They're not playing in the second division for Leeds United. So I wouldn't have thought that that would have been the reaction. And also I wouldn't have thought the manager would accept that as being, you know, the reaction. You've got to accept that everyone on that team makes mistakes. Everyone, Calvin included, has made mistakes. Nottingham Forest away last year, getting himself sent off. What an idiot. But
still not over it, though.
No.
Or Jack Robinson's blatant red card that wasn't given.
Yeah. Or being 2-1 up and not able to hold the lead.
Yeah.
Or 3-0 up and not being able to hold the lead, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
John, I often pick up things throughout the week and send you a message about those particular things. Now, I can't remember the person in question on this occasion, but it was with regards to the argument that perhaps the players are now suffering from the fitness regime that Marcelo Bielsa puts upon them. You don't buy into this?
I think it was Dave Pruttman, maybe, who said it, yeah. I don't buy into it because I don't think the evidence backs it up. And Marcelo Bielsa likes to say, you know, we have all of this data that we keep. We were monitoring the players on the pitch all the time. They have their vests on that's monitoring heart rate and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know the full extent of what they're measuring, but they're measuring more than just the basics. And he's adamant that, you know, they keep them on the cusp of like of fitness. And sometimes obviously it goes wrong when players get injured, but he said there's no evidence that last season was a fitness thing. And I think it's clear to any Leeds fan watching that Leeds issues weren't fitness issues. They were clearly psychological issues. There was, we dropped off a cliff because suddenly it just became really hard to win because we were like, we should have really be winning in this situation. And now we just, everything seems to go wrong. And we got into that mindset where, you know, it just makes, we've all been in that. We've all played sport and we've all, even the level that we do. I mean, if anyone plays golf, for example, you play golf and some days you just can't do anything and you can't seem to get anything right. And I think that's partly because as soon as things become, as soon as you become aware of what you're doing, it becomes very, very hard to do things. And I think that's kind of what happened. My theory about the Leeds fall off is that Marcelo Bielsa took a squad, he finished 13th, got them challenging for the title. None of those players had been really in situations where they had to deal with that kind of pressure before. And I think it showed. We had young players, we had players who were playing for mid-table teams. And actually, when the crunch came, they weren't able to deal with it psychologically. And hopefully that won't happen again this season.
Okay, fellas, before we move on, I just want to touch on, and I'm going to do myself down a bit here because I've often said on the podcast, on the show over the past few weeks, come on, fellas, it's 11 points, you're all right. And then it was, come on, fellas, it's 9 points, don't worry about it, you're all right. And then it was, it's 6 points. And now if Fulham win today, it's 4 points going into tomorrow. Where are you guys at with regards to the current state of play?
I mean, the last time I was on here, you remember I was wonderfully pessimistic, and I'm right, so that's great. I'm really happy about that. It's a long season, and Championship, was it 19 games to go now? It's a slog. It really is hard. And I think when push comes to shove, the quality in the team should show us through. But like you said, the mental resilience of the players, it's really on their heads. And ironically, it was this time last year, it was QPR away, that things really started to go off the boil, where we lost 1-0, and there's that picture of Bielsa on his haunches in the QPR hall, and I feel like this is the perfect game for this time in the season. Show what we did last year, bounce back, beat them 3-0, something like that, and, you know, show that we're the better team this year and that we can do it.
Yeah, I think it's that belief that things are going to go wrong that actually sort of makes things go wrong. It's that you can already sort of feel the tremors amongst the fan base. It's the, oh no, here we go again sort of thing. And it actually made me think of, on a completely different sport entirely, but Leeds Rhinos team got the grand final, won loads of trophies every year, and every year they would not get the first score. And there's a story about Jamie Jones Buchanan, one of the players in that team, and they went behind, and he said, they were all gathered behind the post, they'd just gone behind first like 2 minutes. He was like, don't worry about it, lads, we never like get the first try, but we always win. And there's just that belief that things will come good. And at the moment it feels like we've got the opposite thing going on. Like, we could win tomorrow, we could win against Millwall on the 28th, and you know, there's still that nagging sense of uncertainty. The first time next time we lose a game, oh, we're definitely staying down. And it's one defeat creates that belief.
I think it's not helped as well by the fact that the turning point was being 3-0 up against Cardiff and then giving away that 3-0 lead to a team that were absolutely terrible. Mm. And you know, you as a Leeds fan, you just never feel as though you're safe. And I think when you have that sort of psychology like behind it, it just means that every game is going to be treated as, oh, well, you know, we got through that game, but then there's the next game. We've got to win that. If we don't win that, then, you know, we could be 3-0 up, not 3-0 up and not convinced we're going to win that as well. So it feels like everything becomes really intense. Every moment has like a heightened significance for Leeds fans, and it just makes it quite difficult, I think.
Difficult indeed. We've got plenty more coming up here on the Leeds United Fan Show. Next up, we are going to be talking shut.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Nat Dufton is in the studio today with us, and James Wood, a debutant as well. Just quickly before we move on, we've got a WhatsApp in from Vernon. And Vernon, we love you too, mate. Thank you very much for your kind words. And next, we have Gary Devonport on the line from the Talking Shut podcast. Hello, Gary.
Good evening, lads. You all right?
Yeah, great, mate. Thanks for coming on this evening. I'm going to start with a quote from John McKenzie, which he's just given on this very show. And he said, as a Leeds United fan, you never feel safe. Do you feel safe, Gary? Do you?
I think John's got a point, to be honest. We've sort of been burnt and cheated on that many times. We trust nobody. But I think the current sort of run of forms and the current angst amongst the fan base, I think, is a little bit of a... accumulation of things. The fact that we've only got one senior striker, the manner in the games that we've kind of thrown away, if you like, the Cardiff one, which I heard you guys talking about earlier, and the fact that on Saturday we were fully in the game, you know, we were the better side, and then typically, in the way it has been all season, when we've lost or drawn games we shouldn't have drawn, we get sucker punched, and that's kind of enough for the other team to go and get what they need to take away from us.
Hey, Gary, Sean. I just wondered how your audience has been recently. Have you got the sense from your fans that there's a lot of anxiety and worry going around?
I think it's a bit mixed, John, to be honest. I think there's the, you know, the optimistic, stick with it, you know, believe the process kind of thing. And then there's the very much pessimistic, you know, if we don't get a number nine in, the world's going to end, that type of thing. But no, I wouldn't say any different than normal. I mean, The thing I've learned in a past life is that Twitter's only a sort of a snapshot into the Leeds United fan base. So generally, if I drop on a Leeds fan out and about, I always like to engage them, particularly if they're not on Twitter, to get their sort of feelings. It's sometimes easy to get the pack mentality on Twitter when it's all going wrong. You know, start believing what everybody else is talking about.
Hi, Gary, it's Nat. I was just wondering how you feel about, you just mentioned Twitter there, and I'm thinking one of the things for me that I think has a massive impact on the players is Elland Road. When things aren't going right, it's an amazing place to be when everything's going brilliantly, but when it goes wrong, it goes quiet so quickly, it turns. What kind of effect do you think that has on the players on the pitch?
We've actually brought this up a couple of times to players that we've had on, and some of them sort of don't pay lip service to it. They say, you know, we don't really pay a great deal of attention. They're very much in the game. They don't really, you know, sort of feel like it's having any effect on the game. But I do think you're right in what you're saying, particularly lately. The Cardiff game, for example, once they got the first, it went quiet on Saturday again. Once Sheffield Wednesday scored and we missed a raft of chances, it went quiet and a little bit of angst started to creep in. And, you know, players will play it down, but you can't say that it won't have an effect. You know, they'll know from coming out for kickoff when it's absolutely roaring that it's not roaring so much. And, you know, I think there was an instance on Saturday where Kiko's received the ball and he could have played it for a quick counter attack, but he didn't. And there's some quite audible sort of moans and groans around him that he'd not played it. So, yeah, it probably does have an effect, but I think none of the players will admit the fact it does.
Hi, Gary, James here. I was just wondering, do you think this thing with the back half of the season is not just this season or indeed last season, it's every year. I remember a couple of years back we had the Man United game at Old Trafford 10 years ago now, and we sort of fell apart in the back half of the season. People blamed it on the cup run, and last year we fell apart in the back half of the season, but we didn't have a cup run. Is that just a thing that happens to us every year, or why does it seem to happen that we always get to, we're always the, you know, the winter champions, and you know, come April at squeaky bum time?
Yeah, there does appear to be some form of sort of second half lethargy, if you like. I think some of the performances recently have kind of brought that to bear again, going flat in games. But I can't really put my finger on it. I mean, we did a talking shit. We did a show about the League One promotion season. The collapse after the Man United game was pretty biblical. To be fair, it was probably more biblical than last year's collapse were, but with obviously differing consequences. I don't know. I mean, a lot of the players you speak to or you're around said that they learned from last year that, you know, they're going to take every game as it comes. They weren't going to get ahead of themselves and all that type of thing. But it does appear to be a bit of a problem. But I think probably a psychological sort of mental problem. I don't know how much last year the Dan James saga sort of didn't really help, and Spygate rumbling on for so long. It kind of left us flat, and then we never really came back from that. And then obviously injuries. I think literally everybody were injured. I think the week I was talking shit, maybe 28 injuries or something. So yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. I mean, you know, we're talking about this now because of the run of results we've had and a disappointing defeat Sheffield Wednesday. Beat QPR 3-0 tomorrow. We've got a run of three games that we could take maximum points from, and suddenly everything's rosy again after that.
Are you fed up of the transfer market sagas yet?
Absolutely. yeah. It's one of the things, isn't it, that it's... You can't help but look because you want to know, but when you do look, it's massively frustrating.
But what do you know as well, Gary? You say you want to know, but ultimately we don't really know anything because it's just full of absolute nonsense, hot air and guff, isn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's really difficult to sort of filter out the decent stuff from the terrible stuff. And obviously we're fortunate that we've got Graham Smith and Phil A and, you know, big Leeds reporters, if you like, who can give us the truth. But it's funny how every January and every summer transfer window, you're a freelance journalist appear with about four followers and a stock image.
I'm feeling very seen right now.
Yeah, for some reason we start believing him, and I can never really get my head around that. But
yeah, well, it's fine because we can confirm that Victor Orta has driven to Hull, packed Jared Bowen in the back of a black transit van, and is currently on the M62, and that'll be on Sky Sports News in about 10 minutes.
Did you not see the tweet last night of Angus Kinnear in a train station, and somebody spotted that there was a train to Hull in about 10 minutes, and they were like, ooh.
I think there's also one to Plymouth as well. I think that raised an eyebrow.
What do you think that we will end up with in the market? Do you have hope that they'll get that backup striker that we need?
Yeah, I think... both from a player's perspective and also from a fan base, the club will be well aware that second striker needs to come in. That there's much more than just the ability to obviously have a striker come off the bench. It'll go some way to alleviating some fears and, you know, maybe give the players a lift. You know, and you get a new player in and around, you know, it gives, you know, the players a bit of a lift. I mean, they're talking about the young lad from Man City, Perveda, I think he's called, ironically Ian Perveda, which always makes me laugh a bit. I think by the sounds of things, he probably is going to come in. And Leeds kind of had their heart set on Shea Adams, which, I'll be honest, for a short period of time, I had my heart set on Shea Adams as well. But it doesn't look like that one's going to come off. So it'll be interesting to see what does come off, to be honest.
And just with regard to the window itself, Gary, do you like the January window? Because we have a lot of fans who come on here and some say, oh, it should be extended back up to March the way it used to be back in the day. It's only January because of Sky Sports and Jim White absolutely losing his mind on transfer deadline day. Are you a fan of the January window, or do you wish that it was just abolished?
I just wish it were abolished, to be honest. It's just become a bit of a joke, and it forces clubs into doing deals that they probably wouldn't do, like ridiculous figures getting banded around just because it's January. But it's just been commercialised, hasn't it, to the ninth degree. You can't turn that certain sports station on Sky without there being some sort of transfer update. And a lot of the time, it's just stuff that they've read on Twitter that they're just regurgitating. I mean, some of the links you see during the January window are just nothing short of ridiculous. I mean, the Bowen link to Leeds yesterday, in my eyes, that's purely about Hull generating interest in Bowen because they stand to lose him for free in the summer. And from what were reported in the press, although a lot of clubs fancy him, nobody's actually put a bid in. So it's a bit convenient to then link Leeds with a 3 million up front and then 15 million in summer, pretty much the way that the Che Adams deal was structured, in a way to kind of force a bit of a sales frenzy, if you like. So yeah, for me, I'd get rid of it. I don't think it's great for the sport, and I think it's just been commercialised to death now.
I completely agree with you, boss. Before you go, mate, thanks for coming on yet again this evening. But QPR up next, what are you seeing is going to happen in that one?
I think it'll be a tough game. They've been indifferent. I think they put five past Sunday and then six past Sunday.
They beat Swansea, yeah.
So, you know, they're not going to roll over and let us tickle his belly. And I mean, I think if we get 10, 15 minutes into the game and we're controlling things, and I know it's Leeds United, but we take our chances, then we've got more than enough to beat QPR, even though it is in London and we're not doing very well in London of late. So, yeah, tough game. They've got, you know, attacking threat. It'd be interesting to see what he does at left back and what he does in the central midfield. But, yeah, I think, you know, like I said previously, we've got a run of three games here that we should really, if we're looking seriously at promotion, be looking at maximum points from all three games.
Gary, thank you very much for joining us. Boss, that was Gary Devonport from the Talking Shut podcast. With regards to transfer rumours, fellas, if you need a striker, I think Eddie Nketiah is free, isn't he? Arsenal. he's not going anywhere.
I honestly don't understand the logic behind that. He's gone back there. They've got Lacazette, they've got Aubameyang, they've got Martinelli. He's gone back to be the fourth choice striker at Arsenal. You know, get a couple of minutes in the cup now. He probably have played more staying with us than he would have done going there. So,
Lacazette started in the FA Cup against us and Martinelli came off the bench, so yeah, you've got to imagine that he's not even going to get time in the cup.
And it looks like Arteta wants to play one up top, so with three strikers in front of him, it doesn't seem to make much sense for a move.
It's frustrating. I think we've really been done over by Arsenal, really. You know, there's a lot of people saying, oh, why have we not brought anyone in yet? But there's so much about the January transfer window that just makes it impossible to do decent business. Clubs hold all of the cards in that kind of thing, in that kind of situation, and can drive the prices up, and you end up just getting someone who you don't really want for too much and upsetting the long-term plans that you have anyway. So, yeah, I think we assumed that we would have Eddie Nketiah for at least the season. I mean, Bielsa said he wanted him for two. But it's not happened that way, and now we're in the mud because of it. So
seems bizarre, doesn't it? He came out, didn't he, this week and spoke about it as well, Bielsa, kind of hit back at Arsenal. We're seeing this with a few clubs. Conor Gallagher now has gone on loan to Swansea, hasn't he? He was on a season-long loan at Charlton. Chelsea recalled him within their rights, which is what Arsenal are, to recall Eddie Nketiah, I suppose, within their rights. But Chelsea have recalled him, and then he's gone back out on loan to another Championship club.
It was weird that we were at the Charlton game and he was the best player in the park. He was brilliant. And at that moment, I looked at him and thought, hang on, I'd have him. We've got injury problems. Why don't we have him in midfield? And I don't know why we haven't, you know, sort of barked at Chelsea and said...
Chelsea don't like us.
Oh, no, that's why. Oh, Frank Lampard, yeah.
We've ended a few careers, haven't we, for Chelsea these days.
Lovely stuff. Gents, it's QPR up next, of course. Flo Lloyd-Hughes will be joining us from the QPR podcast.
We've all got one and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station. The Opposition View on Love Sport.
I was panicking there. Did you see me?
I did see you, mate. Calm down.
A bit of a longer segue than I was expecting.
It's okay, mate. It's all good. We've all got it under control here. On the Leeds United fan show, that was John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Just slightly panicking about us coming back in on air. It's me, Matt Beadle, joined by John, Nat Dufton and James Wood. Right now, we are going to focus our attentions to the game this weekend against QPR. Now, QPR have won four of their past five home games against Leeds in all competitions, chaps. So... this will be an interesting game this week. And Flo Lloyd-Hughes from the QPR podcast is going to talk to us all about it. Hello, Flo.
Hey, guys.
Great to have you on the line, Flo. Now, QPR, a couple of good results, then a couple of not-so-good results. Have got decent form against Leeds, you'd like to think, as I've just said, over the past few seasons or so. How do you see this one going?
I think it would have been going better if Leeds hadn't been on a bit of a poor run, because on this season, what kind of the form has told us is that teams that aren't on a good run come to Loftus Road and change their season. So that's the only downside. But like you said, we have actually got a couple of good results against Leeds United recently, which historically hasn't always been the case, but we've actually had a bit of luck. And that 1-0 home win last season was kind of Steve McLaren's last hurrah before he got sacked a couple of weeks later. So, I'm not feeling, I'm not feeling as bad as I did with the Brentford game when I kind of knew we were going into that and we were probably going to get turned over. So I'm feeling semi-confident, I'd say.
So just to confirm, Flo, sorry, you're saying your reservations are because Leeds are not playing too well at the moment?
Exactly.
Brilliant.
So this season, whenever a team comes into town that aren't playing well, we're the ones who get them back on track, basically. That's been the case throughout the year. Is if you want a good pick-me-up, head to Loftus Road and that'll change your situation.
Hi Flo, it's John. I've got a question about Eze, because obviously you have, well, throughout the season you've been playing a couple of formations, but you've basically landed on the 4-2-3-1 with Eze playing out wide on the left. A lot of the time in the season you actually played a back three, sort of 3-5-2 with him in the middle, and he was quite dangerous there. I think he was in that position when you played Elland Road in the earlier fixture. How do you think Eze's been since they moved him out left? Do you think that's been a bad move for him?
No, I think he's been okay. He's been mixed. I mean, against Cardiff and Swansea, we won 6-1 and 5-1. He didn't feature in the Swansea game, but in the Cardiff game, he was fantastic. And I think in the Brentford game, it was hard for really anyone to get on the ball because Brentford, they were a much better team all round. So I think he's still effectual in that position. Things to worry about are the four. I mean.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Briefly played at centre back on Saturday for the first half and was completely lost of errors and then slipped into a defensive midfield run, which is obviously more his forms a lot better. The first is much more the problem. I think QPR's attacking midfield three of Chair, they are
I think we've lost the line there with Flo Lloyd-Hughes of the QPR podcast. We're going to try and get her back on. But, gents, are you buying in essentially to what she's saying there, Nat?
I mean, the idea of being a team coming there and not performing and getting a result, I mean, I'd love that. That'd be great. So, I think, yeah, I have seen a couple of times teams do go there and they do kind of turn up. And, I mean, I really hope we can do that, but we'll see, you know. It's a game I never enjoy. We never enjoy London. We've been to London games this year and won nothing. So, yeah.
It's one of those things that I think every fan says about their team. I remember like Millwall playing against us a couple of years ago and they were on like a 10-game losing run and obviously they beat us at Elland Road. I think it's just something everyone thinks. Like QPR are not themselves on a bad run, as she said. They've scored a lot of goals, but they've also let a lot of goals in. They can't defend. So it feels like it's the sort of game that is not going to be easy on my nerves. Particularly with Kiko letting in every shot that goes near him, so shoot from 40 yards and be my advice to Naki Wells. But yeah, it's one that certainly, if it feels like a game that's set up for us to do well out of, given their defensive frailty.
Yeah, I mean, they've conceded more goals than anyone apart from Barnsley and Luton, and they've only been outscored by West Brom, I think. So I think it's going to be an interesting game. I think there'll be goals in it both ways. And yeah, it could. I said in our tactics preview this week that I put out on our feed expect it to be Birmingham away 2.0, because I've got a feeling that it could just be a frantic game played backwards and forwards. I watched the Brentford game back, and it was an interesting one. I think obviously Brentford are a great side. They're looking really good at the moment. They've got confidence. They've got momentum, but they scored the goals very quickly early on in the first half. They didn't look particularly world beating, I didn't think, from that. They scored from a couple of set pieces and etc. And I thought, you know, QPR gave a good account of themselves. So I think that result, I think people have jumped on the Brentford bandwagon, and I've been on
them. Do
you
think it's a bandwagon, do you?
I think it is, but only because what we are always have to be aware of in the Championship is that teams always go on runs of form. No team plays like last season. The two teams that went up started off quite badly and came back into it. All teams, I think, have runs of form, and the question is whether or not Brentford are on a purple patch, or whether or not they've actually got a sustainable run going which will last for the rest of the season. I'm not entirely sure that that's the case. I think they've had a few away wins where I think they had a red card. I can't remember the game that they had a red card really early on, and they got the win away from home.
It was
there.
Bristol. Ashley Williams decided he didn't like Ollie Watkins anymore and just
I mean, you have to give credit, I think, to Ollie Watkins in that sense, because Williams had clearly gone into that thinking, right, I'm going to rile this lad up. Yeah. I'm going to get him sent off. And Watkins was close to biting. And if you notice, when Williams ran off, Watkins was giving him the verbals. So Williams didn't win it. He clearly got in his head. But Watkins, yeah. Fair play to him.
No, of course, and that's I was going to say gamesmanship, but I don't know if that's the right word.
It's cheating. Brentford cheats, but no. Yeah. Dean Smith.
But you know, that's a game where they obviously from that point on they dominated the game. We said all the way through the season that if Brentford could sort out their away form, there's just a big discrepancy between their home and away form, and so it will be interesting to see. For example, they've got Huddersfield away tomorrow. That's the sort of game where, you know, if your away form isn't quite up to it, you could easily lose. So I think we're still at a point where I'm not convinced that they're entirely on the sunny uplit slopes all the way up to the Premier League. And I think, you know, there's still a way to go yet. So I think we need to hold on a little bit. We ended up talking about Brentford, and this is the opposition view. Yeah, which opposition?
I'll be sure to feed that back. We do have the Huddersfield fan show later at 10:30. We're going to have a Brentford fan on the line, so I'll be sure to feed that back, John. There is one name here, gents, that we're all neglecting to mention right now, and that is someone who could be given his debut for QPR this weekend.
I don't want Jack to do it. I feel like they've bought this. They've deliberately pushed for it for like a shock and awe factor. They've like, what is it? They signed him yesterday. Yeah, come on, that's mind games. He will come on. I can guarantee, especially if we're winning, they will throw him on just to see what it does. Just to like get in the players' heads, that kind of thing. And he will do something. I know it.
Yeah, but he's. So I'd be disappointed if he did, because he's been at the club with us now for 2 years training with the first team. He's been up against Luke Ayling for that entire time. He's got one trick, which is cut inside, which he best uses from the left, up where we'll be up against Ayling. So, you know, the thing we saw with him towards the back end of last season is that he came through and people suddenly started to wise up to what he was going to do. He'll roll the ball towards the corner flag and then try and cut in and get a cross in. So, you know, Luke knows what he has to do. All he has to do is show him towards the corner flag. He's very one-footed, and everything should be fine. But yeah, there is that, you know, that worry that, oh, it's a former player playing against us, therefore they will obviously come on and do something.
The reverse Iron Robin, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Which did not happen when we played them with Rob Green in goal after he left, like, the season, but the summer before, and we shipped three. Like, there's no like series of world-class saves to keep us in the game, because obviously that's what former players do.
Jack Clark worried, John?
Nah, no, not worried. No, Jack Clark was never. I shouldn't say this, should I? Because this is just going to bite us, isn't it? But he was never. He was always a shadow of his former self after he had that that viral infection that he had. And I can't. maybe the effect of actually having a game against his former club, where he has that just extra oomph behind him. Maybe he'll pull something out. But in terms of like. Looking at it in a balanced way, I don't think that Leeds should be worried about him for the reasons that James says. Like, they know how to defend against Jack Clark. They've been doing it in training for years. So, but yeah, I'm not too worried about that.
Okay. Well, to finish, it has been just over 25 years when Marcelo Bielsa last lost three consecutive away games against one opponent. And that was when he was manager of Atlas, and the opponent was Santos Laguna. So let's just hope it doesn't happen tomorrow against QPR. Listeners' questions next.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
The Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Nat Dufton and James Wood in the studio as well. Nat, do you want to just repeat what you said in the ads then about tomorrow's game?
I said we're going to get beat.
Definitely?
Yeah.
Right, brilliant. Okay, we'll move swiftly on. On to listeners' questions. Right, I don't like this negativity in the studio, chaps. Come on.
I'm right, though. I was right last year and I'm right this year.
Okay, well, I'm going to the game with you tomorrow. Should you stick around on that?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Stick around on that, yeah.
Okay, sound.
The stakes.
That's my, I can cry into my pint as I win it.
Yeah. It's listeners' questions now, chaps, and I enjoy this aspect because it's interaction and we love that. And if you want to send your questions in, of course, you can too at Love Sport Radio 2. Do not forget that. But we're going to start with Tom Woodhead. He said, it feels like we've been better this season when facing two strikers and playing three at the back, with Ayling in that hybrid centre-back slash full-back role than when playing a back four against a lone striker. Any truth in this or just warped perception?
I don't know if I agree with this. I think we've struggled with some teams who've played in a sort of 4-4-2 and gone for long balls and a sort of gegenpressing approach. I'm thinking Huddersfield in particular causes a lot of problems playing in that way. So I don't think it's necessarily the setup. But having said that, in the month where we had a wonderful run, I think it was September, we had 5 wins in September, November.
Is that when Bielsa won manager of the month?
Yeah. We played 3-3-1-3 almost exclusively through that run, and I think that makes a big difference. Partly just because teams aren't used to playing against that kind of approach, I think. Partly because it's just a while. I watched Parma Roma yesterday, and because I'm a hipster, and the Coppa Italia was on, and Paolo Fonseca had them playing in a 3-3-1-3, and I was like, Parma just don't have a clue what they're doing here. They have no idea what they're playing against, and I just think that teams in the Championship, when they come up against Leeds playing that 3-3-1-3, they're just like, that we do this weird thing we talked about. I remember your eyes sort of misting over when I tried explaining how Stuart Dallas was playing as a sort of right wing back, but he was dropping into a left full back position, yeah, like when we were in possession and stuff. And yeah, it's quite a crazy formation. So I think maybe that's partly to do with it. Also, I think if you're playing two strikers, you're playing probably one fewer midfielder almost exclusively, unless you're playing 3-5-2. But yeah, if you're doing that, then Leeds are going to dominate in the midfield areas anyway, so you're sort of making it a little bit easier for them as well. So when you're asking a question like that, you just have to think through, like, why might that be the case? Is it simply the two strikers, or is it something that happens further back down in the structure of what's going on?
Agree with that, Chas?
I really don't. I think against two strikers, we've tended to struggle a bit more. Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday away, Charlton where we lost, Millwall. The only game I can think against two strikers we were really comfortable was actually QPR at home, where we sort of held them back, and they actually had more of the ball than we did, but all in their own half, where it was completely useless.
Two strikers are always going to be playing the ball in the air high, and we know that we struggle against that, right? That's the sort of corollary of us being bad at set pieces as well, I think. You know, so I think two strikers can cause us problems for sure.
If I'm correct as well, it's not Ayling that drops in, it's Phillips drops back from his defensive midfield role to make that sort of auxiliary back line,
yeah,
when teams...
Well, it depends if we set up as a 4-1-4-1, sometimes he will drop in between, and then they'll form what's called a situational back three, which is he's only there really when we're in possession of the ball. So it does depend, but we have played a few times with White on one side, Berardi or Cooper, and then Ayling as a sort of outside centre back as well. It does depend, and I just think we also had that run during a very I think it was quite an easy run of fixtures, relatively speaking, and we play off that 7 wins in a row as though that wasn't like a probably an easier run that we had. So I think that probably impacts it as well. The fact that we played that back three against probably easier opponents probably means that we did play a little bit better when we were up against two strikers in that scenario. But yeah, there was plenty of games where we, like you say, there's like the Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday away, etc., that where we really did struggle with two strikers.
Okay, a bit of transfer chat again, fellas. We've kind of covered it already in the show, but we'll just quickly go over it again. This is from Mark Thompson. James, I'll come to you on this. If you were in Orta's shoes, what would you do? Would you wait for Adams/Gray until later in the window and hope they become available? Risk it on an injured Dwight Gale, get a Connor Whittemore or Glenn Murray for numbers, or take a punt on a foreign signing?
I'd wait for the right player. So I think at this time of the year, money sort of burns a hole in the fans' pockets. They want to see some money go out the door, see a player come in, regardless of whether it's the right player or not. And it's not about bodies. It's not a case of we don't have a person to play up front. Jack Harrison's played up front for us. Tyler Roberts, when he's fit, can play up front. Ryan Edmondson is in the 23s. If we need a fit human to play striker, they are available. It's about where that person will do better than that alternative. There's no point paying money for someone if they're only going to be as good as Ryan Edmondson out of the academy is. So I wouldn't pay money for somebody who doesn't fit Bielsa's system. And it's easy to say, oh, there's one fit striker, what happens if Bamford, you know, gets injured? But equally, you know, what if we sign, you know, Brittson, Belonga, Dwight Gayle, they walk in the door, you know, twang their hamstring and they're immediately out for the rest of the season. You can't legislate for that kind of thing. So
well, Dwight Gayle has already twanged.
He's already twanged.
Exactly. So I don't think it makes sense to pursue a player for the sake of to sign somebody for the sake of signing somebody, essentially. Like, it's got to be the right player that will fit within Bielsa's system that he'll actually use and give minutes to.
Okay, we'll finish the transfer chat now, shall we? We'll move on. Actually, we've got one more. And I like this one. This is from Panda Beta. This is, with the likelihood of Bournemouth getting relegated and Leeds getting promoted being pretty high, would you recommend trying to get Lewis Cook back? How do you think he'll play under Bielsa?
100% I'd have Lewis back in a heartbeat. He's that kind of creative number eight that Bielsa loves. From what I remember, he's got a strong tackle. Range of passing's really good. He fits the Bielsa mould as a midfielder perfectly. He's very dynamic, very athletic, and he's a Leeds boy. And, you know, I'd have him back home. Yeah, 100%.
I agree with you. I can see how he'd fit into the system. You sort of see him as a for sure Clich replacement. At the same time, I do think this is kind of the like Eeyore-ish boring side, but because it's Leeds back in the Premiership, Leeds buying back the family silver, will end up spending a lot more on him than he's actually worth just to do that, because it's such a PR clue for the club. Like, if he signs for, I don't know, West Brom or Norwich or some other team that's like mid-table in the Premier League because Bournemouth have got relegated, it's, oh, you're just buying a midfielder. If we go back up and buy back Lewis Cook, it's we're taking back the future that should rightfully have been ours, and therefore you can, you know, stick another 5-10 million on the price just to do that.
It's a very good point, well made there, James, I have to say.
I'm usually the last person in the world to be like, yeah, we should bring X player back. But I actually do think that Lewis Cook would be a good buy for us. He, like you say, fits the system. He's a local lad, so yeah, whatever. Does that, whatever that means, I don't know. But
he was also in John McKenzie's team of the decade.
Yeah, that's true. He was exceptional as a 17-year-old playing in League One as a midfielder. He's still the only reason I got through those seasons. So maybe I'm being a little bit misty-eyed, etc. But I think he's what we need. He's the worry, I think, would be his injury proneness. He's just rumbled on with injury problems. So we've already got injury-prone midfielders who are very good. So maybe we don't need one. But yeah, I'd love to have Lewis Cook back in our team.
Okay, a couple more stats-based bants now. John Murray, obviously conversion of chances stats are not great to look at compared to most teams in the Championship, but compared to last season, are we performing better or worse, John?
I think Nat said he wanted to answer this one, didn't he?
Shall we go, Nat?
I have nothing to say about this. I've got absolutely no idea about these stats.
I've got the stats here. So Y Scout has us on 43 goals this season from 409 shots, which is a conversion rate of 10.51%. Last season we had 76 goals from 767 shots, which is just under 10%, so it's 9.91. So we are slightly better than we were conversion-wise this season. But for reference, this season West Brom are top scorers with 50 goals from 344 shots, which is a conversion rate of 14.53. Obviously, the higher the number, the better in this one. Norwich finished last season with 93 goals from 659 shots, which is 14.11%. So we're down on the conversion rates from other teams, but we're slightly up from our conversion rates from last season.
And what's the APR on those, mate? I'm not sure.
Ring Matt, he will sort you out.
It's fascinating, though, those particular stats, aren't they? So regardless of what people actually think, there is a slight improvement this season.
Yeah, but I think it's minimal, right? It's the difference between just under 10% and just over 10%. So yeah, they're better, but like, it's still, you're still 4% off what teams who have a decent conversion rate are at, and you probably want to be one of those teams if you're vying for promotion. So yeah, same old problems. What the explanations for why that might be the case or anything, I don't know really, because I don't think we feel like a team who shoots from distance, so it's not as though we're taking lower percentage chances. I mean, obviously, there's the narrative that Patrick Bamford misses easy chances, but you'd have to do a little bit more digging beneath the surface to find out more. I was going to look at box shots, because we talk about box shots a lot. Obviously, a box shot is more likely to be scored than a non-box shot. So if you have a look at conversion rates and with respect to box shots, you should have a much better sense of whether or not Leeds are just being unlucky, or whether or not there are shots from outside the box, which we shouldn't be taking. But I mean, Stuart Dallas has his fair share of terrible shots. So
Alioski puts those over the bar as well.
Yeah, Alioski can miss in the box as well, so yeah. I don't think it makes too much of a difference. But yeah, I think that there is a worry with our conversion rates. Because we are all about creating a large volume of shots, and we are all about creating probably better chances if we can. So there is concerns about the conversion rate.
But that's endemic to the team, though, and that was endemic to the team not just when Bamford came in. I remember when he came in for the West Brom game after Roof had been in the team and said, Roof never misses his chances, but we've got Bamford and he's fit now and he's going to put every single chance away, and he's never really done any better than he did in that first West Brom game back. So
the stats last season as well on Roof were that he was about equal in terms of conversion rates with Bamford as well. So I think there's this whole narrative that we miss, the Bamford misses great chances, but I don't think Roof was much better. What Bamford was bad at was, if you look at what's called post-shot XG, so post-shot XG takes XG and then looks at what you do with it after you've taken the shot, so it looks at where it's going in relation to the goalkeeper and basically analyses how good the chances are on that basis. And Patrick Bamford was down 80% on that, so 20% on that. So he was basically one in five chances he was making significantly worse. So he's improved on that this season. So he's actually technically a better finisher this season than he was. So.
But the cause of our sort of poor run of results over the last few games, aside from poor refereeing, see Fulham, was the defence and the problems there. Like, none of the chances that Birmingham had were particularly good. Fulham get a lucky ricochet in the box. Wednesday, it's a keeper error. It's tightening up at the
same
back.
Same with Arsenal as well. Arsenal goal was like a deflection into the feet of a player. So
it's that tightening up at the back that we've got to do.
We've talked a lot about midfield as well. The midfield is really important because I think the defence is under pressure because the midfield isn't as controlling. So,
gents, it's been nothing but a pleasure having you here for the hour. Just before you go, a score prediction. Now, I'm pretty sure I know what yours is going to be, but we're going to come to you anyway. John, I'll begin with you.
I'll say 2-0.
Oh, crikey, don't be too enthusiastic about
it. I'm going to leave it. No. we'll win 2-0. We'll win 2-0.
2-0. Nat?
A really sad 1-0 loss.
1-0 loss.
3-1 to us.
3-1. There we go, James Wood. That is why you're here on the show for your debut. James, it has been fantastic. We'll be back next week, 8 p.m. on Friday. Leeds United Fan Show. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.